Welcome back to another episode of CQP Moments. As always, I am your host, the Coupon Queen Pin. Now, guys, I have a guest today by the name of Molly McLaughlin, and she is going to share with us why sleep is a skill. So, before we get into everything, let's take a moment out for our sponsors, and I'll be right back with Molly.
Hey, this is P. Perkins Heard from the Trep Life Podcast, and you are listening to the CQP Moments Podcast. Remember to subscribe, share, and enjoy.
So, guys, like I was telling you, I am here with Molly McLaughlin, and she is a sleep expert. Now, I didn't know there was such a thing. I just thought about going to bed. But Molly, can you introduce yourself and tell us what a sleep expert does?
Yes, so well said. Many people didn't know there could be such a thing because it seems very ironic, doesn't it, that we would actually need to learn more on, or that there's an opportunity to learn more and have guidance around something that we do every single night. So that's exactly what my company does. I have a company called Sleep is a Skill. And what the intention is behind the company is that we help people optimize their sleep through technology, accountability, and behavioral change methods. So we bring in some really interesting metrics into our sleep to kind of help demystify what can often be a confusing area where people are like, I don't know, I get around a certain, you know, 6.5, 7 hours of sleep.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of fogginess in the world of sleep. Certainly as a on a personal level, when we're trying to gain power around it, or if we want to improve it. Like anything, if you don't have, you know, some clarity around how things are now, it can be challenging to improve and get somewhere new without those specifics. So we kind of bring in the specifics and also look at some really new, exciting findings around circadian rhythm optimization and strengthening your circadian rhythm, understanding chronobiology, and pulling these things into a modern day world filled with, you know, all the things that we have going on that can be, have us be a bit more disconnected from sleep like we used to have it as such a given that would happen and occur on a rhythm in the past. We're not necessarily doing that now.
Right. So, okay, I heard you say circadian rhythm. What is that? Because I have heard it, but I'm not quite sure what it is.
Yes, such a great question. So essentially, you know, all creatures on this planet have some sort of rhythm that they are operating within. And so for humans, we are at around a 24-hour rhythm, plus or minus a few minutes. And what that rhythm means is that if you were to, you know, really put us in total darkness, that by and large, we would still kind of have, you know, the idea is that we'd still get sleepy at certain similar times and be awake at certain times, all within that 24-hour parameter. However, what is really powerful is that there are the circadian rhythm, the strength of it, and it's the ability for us to count audibly, get tired at a particular time, sleep, you know, with great sleep quality reliably, and wake up with, you know, energy has a lot to do with, you know, there's a lot of things that play into that, but a lot of it has to do with these external cues from our environment that are, you know, based back thousands of years. It's kind of what we've been used to as cues that, okay, this is the time to go to sleep. This is the time to wake up. Right. And there is a lot that we can do to control that, that certainly for me, before I got into this arena, I had zero clue that I was really interrupting or making that system less powerful than it could be.
Oh, okay. So, okay, here is a question, because like you said, we normally have the schedule and we're like, okay, I'm in bed by 9 and my alarm clock wakes me up at like 5 or 6. Is that is that a good thing to have? Is that a bad thing to have? Because I do notice that sometimes when we do that, like even on our days off, we will wake up on the same time. Like on a Saturday, you're like,
why?
And you're like, wait a minute, it's Saturday.
Exactly. Well, so with that, I actually would say that that's an amazing thing because some people are not experiencing that. You know, their circadian rhythm is so off and so variable that they can easily sleep well in past, you know, many, many hours past their normal wake up time. And wow. So if your body, so if your body is pulling for that consistency, we could make the argument that your circadian rhythm is very strong, or there could be some external things going on. Like, you know, if there's a lot of light that comes into, our environment, like looking at that. But ultimately, if we pan out, what we're aiming to do is keep consistency within our sleep schedule 7 days a week, which is challenging, or for many can be challenging because, of course, you know, we're in a modern day society and so many of us now have skewed so much later than we ever used to before. And so because of that, what we're seeing for so many people is this kind of self-induced jet lag. And what that looks like is, you know, whatever, 4 or 5 nights out of the week, you got your system that you were saying, yeah, I go to bed at 9, I wake up at whatever, 5 or 6. And that's how it is until, woohoo, it's Thursday, it's Friday, it's whatever. And then all of a sudden we're staying up, you know, 3, 4, 5 hours for some people, even later than our normal schedule. So if you imagine, you know, what that looks like to whatever, to go to Europe and you have maybe a 6-hour difference from New York, to London or something, right? Like you suddenly what we're doing to ourselves is kind of, on our own terms, creating this problem, this mismatch of our inner time versus our external time. And so what you experience is then your body trying to adjust and spending the next few days kind of, revved down in its ability to, function at, you know, your optimal capacity, because it's trying to get itself back onto a rhythm, which really is so important. We're only just starting to realize some of the impact of when we get off of this rhythm. Like, you know, you might've seen in more recent years, some of these conversations around link ups between Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, dementia, rates as it relates to sleep deprivation.
Right. I have seen that.
Yeah. Right. So it's starting to come out and people are suddenly starting to take this a bit more seriously. And because the rates of so many of us dealing with subpar sleep, and, you know, when we say sleep deprivation, like that can really, you know, just quantify a less than sufficient amount of sleep for yourself in your life. So if that's the case, you know, that you can imagine that a lot of people are kind of fitting into that bucket right now. So if, you know, what we're seeing is, I'm kind of calling it almost like a sleep renaissance or something, where people are beginning to, wake up, pun intended, to this topic, and it's exciting time. And it's going to take a lot of, thinking or re-examining an area that often doesn't get, as much attention as it could.
Right. Okay. So, okay, you started this, you started Sleep is a Skill, which I will not argue, yes, sleep is definitely a skill, because sometimes, even myself, I struggled with sleeping.
Sure, absolutely.
So what made you say, okay, this is something that other people need to know how to do?
So a couple of things. So the reason I even called the company Sleep is a Skill is because that's one of my fundamental arguments, that today in our day and age, in our modern day society, sleep has now become a skill set. And, you know, it's kind of an ironic statement. And, you know, if you were to go back into hunter-gatherer days and try to make that argument, you know, it would just land on deaf ears, because it would just sound ridiculous, because it was, you know, just so... largely like a part of our functioning. And so this, or at least the strength of her circadian rhythm was there. Of course, they had all other things that they had to deal with back in the day too. You know, there was problems with a sense of safety. There is, you know, some other things, but their connection to sunrise and sunset, which is one of the primary cues for our body of what time of day it is and what we need to be doing. So the production of cortisol in the morning and the production of melatonin in the evening are very, very closely tied to those two key rhythms. So that was something that was always a given back in the day. Today, since basically, you know, Edison, since, you know, the invention of the light bulb, things have gotten skewed off of that, that rhythm. So now what we see is, of course, if you imagine in the past, you know, the sun would set and it was kind of like party over. Maybe there was, maybe you had a little bit of fire or something, but you're largely going to bed shortly after the sunset for the most part, because you couldn't do a whole heck of a lot. Whereas right. Now, I mean, I don't know about you, but for me, for many years, you know, living in the middle of Manhattan, I could not tell you when the sun was setting or rising. I had no connection to that. It just wasn't a part of my knowing. And right. Instead, I was on my own self-created schedule that involved almost like a total mismatch. And I would, during the days, would be very little light. And at night, then would be when I'd flip on all kinds of blue light, you know, oh, got to buckle down, get to work, you know, as an entrepreneur, and was doing, you know, was really like a total night owl. I'd be going to bed as the sun was rising for many years and thought really? There was nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. And until it reached a tipping point, and then I dealt with insomnia for a bunch of months. Actually, this is when we, my boyfriend and I began traveling, and, you know, adding jet lag into the mix and mm-hmm. and stress and work stress and all, you know, burning the candle at both ends. And suddenly I got to experience what life was like without that consistent sleep. And it was something that was so monumental in my life. It really served as a huge wake up call. Mm-hmm. And served as a, all right, I got to re-examine how I'm doing things here. And then went down the rabbit hole and learned so much in this area. I was like, how does everyone not know this? This is crazy. So I started working with different people just that were also really suffering. And, you know, just started doing that on the side. And it became clear to me that this is the time around sleep. Like, it's really something that's not only are the rates of sleep deprivation so high, like high and rising, they're expected to really exponentially rise. You know, the more and more tech and blue light and indoor living that we're all kind of a part
right,
of.
Right.
You know, if you look at some of the stats, on average, people are, or at least some of the perceived stats are around 90% of our days in the Western area, you know, in America, are inside. So if we're living right. inside that much, we're, you know, we are modern day zoo animals. So if that's the case, then we're going to have to take a lot more personal responsibility around how we manage our days, and set them up powerfully for the night. So I started bringing in things called, so I've instituted sleep bots. So basically I have sleep bots that, that my clients work with. And right. so each morning they basically debrief how their night went. And then they plan their day around some of the, you know, the things that we're working on around circadian rhythm optimization. And then they start plotting those into how they can bring those into the day to improve their nights. So, wow. which, you know, which what it ends up looking like is it's really fascinating because if you look at in this topic of circadian rhythm,
right,
there are a few key things that are known as time givers for the body. So mm-hmm. Just to have a little science moment, basically we have behind our eyes this part in our brain that's basically called the suprachiasmatic nucleus. And what that does is it's kind of our master clock throughout our whole body. And that is meant to keep all the functioning within our body on time, because there's meant to be this great, you know, kind of choreography going on around the liver doing certain things at a particular time, the, right. you know, stomach doing certain things at a particular time. Right. If we are really inconsistent with our sleep schedules, those things can really get off course, and right. they're beginning to link a lot of, you know, chronic diseases, a lot of also just mood disruption, mood disorders, a lot of you know, just general fatigue, some of these things that are more challenging to put into a bucket of like, why do I just not feel great?
Right, right.
You know, I've now seen on the other side, now that I have my sleep so dialed in and, you know, track it so consistently, it's like I can have a count audibleness that I'll wake up and feel great. Like I just had, I didn't even know that was possible
right.
in the past for so many years for myself. So, you know, now I've just become so addicted to feeling great and then sharing that with others and how to get that. And a lot of it comes from those time givers that are cues to that circadian rhythm, that suprachiasmatic nucleus. And, you know, just to rattle off a few of them, some of the top is light, really. Light's like the most important cue. And of course, with light is also darkness. So those two things are very, very, very important. And then temperature. So that's, and how does temperature get impacted? In the past, we would, you know, be living more outside. So we'd be experiencing when the sun would rise, it would get warm, and then it would get cold at night. But now we don't really have that connection as much. And we're, you know, we have indoor thermostats and what have you. So that can become important to ensure that we're setting up, having warmth in the body in the daytime and then cooling it down in the evening. So we utilize right. different heat therapy, cool therapy. So that can look like saunas, baths, cold exposure. So cold showers, different things like that. So you can use those strategically. That can also improve some of your sleep quality because it relates right. to the mitochondria. And then at the same time, then we look at underneath temperature, there's also a whole conversation around meal timing. Meals will heat up your body quite a bit, surprisingly, mm-hmm. around when you're digesting because it takes a lot. So we want to strategically be mindful of when we're eating. I used to eat like the bulk of my meals at night, like right before bed for so long.
Wow.
I know. It was just like, and it was so queued up for me as relaxation, you know, like, okay, I had a hard day. I can get my popcorn and I can get, you know, a glass of wine and blah, 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 like all the things. And then I, you know, unbeknownst to me, that was yet another thing as to why I was feeling so just dragging each day.
Okay. So in other words, what you're saying is like, it's also what we eat, what we're doing. Like, in other words, we ourselves can be throwing our rhythms off.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So dramatically. And what's so cool is, you know, when you do bring in some of the sleep trackers, while they're not as powerful as a polysonogram, some of them can get us some really interesting information and be really enlightening, almost act as, you know, kind of biofeedback tools. And we can understand, oh my God, like there are times when, you know, you might eat this huge amount of food before bed or work out late and before you go to bed. And then you'll see like, why did my heart rate take so long to lower throughout the night? And that's because it was having to do all this work, you know, to either cool your body down, digest, you know, or alcohol obviously is another clear one that will mess with sleep. Caffeine, you know, all these things. So, but when you see the numbers often for people, it can become more and more evident. They get connected to, oh my God, when I take an action, there's a cause and effect. Mm-hmm. And there's a cause and effect on my sleep in a way that I might not have considered. You know, maybe this conversation around sleep is bigger than just, you know, turn off the lights, keep the phone out of the bed. You know, those are great, but there's, you know, more there. And a lot of it does actually get done during the day.
Right.
It has a lot to do with some other areas that we might not have fully considered are playing a role in all this.
Wow. So you said something in our conversation about a National Sleep Day.
Oh yeah. So, World Sleep Day. Uh-huh. Yeah. That's on March 13th. And that is when I'm going to be launching my podcast. Super excited. Also Sleep is a Skill podcast, and that is on World Sleep Day. I'm actually a, World Sleep Day delegate. So we'll be hosting a, event for that. And
so are you saying on World Sleep Day, we should all take a nap?
That is totally what I'm saying. Well, you have to nap responsibly even. So we want to make sure our naps are at a particular time length and within a particular set of, you know, parameters. But
right.
Yes. Yeah. So, well, you certainly the intention, I'm actually going to be interviewing, someone actually from World Sleep Society is going to be coming in to have a conversation more about how that all came to be. But the intention is to really expand this conversation around sleep and how we can improve it, understanding it in a larger sense, understanding how important it is for our, you know, really just impacting just about every area of our life, and then what we can do about it is really partly what's there.
Okay. So, okay. Now, quick question. Does environment have a lot to do with it? Like, okay, I live in New York City.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things of, honestly, New York City, for anyone that knows you can do just about anything at any time of day.
Yes.
And I think that is one of the things that, in other words, it's really weird because everyone has different sleep schedules.
Yes. Uh-huh. Absolutely. So for you, understanding, does our environment impact our sleep? And the answer is unequivocally yes. Our environment completely impacts our sleep. Actually, it's been one of my things I've been fascinated about. So for the past 3 years, my boyfriend and I have been traveling full time, and we had actually left from Manhattan. We still actually are heading back to Manhattan in a couple of weeks. So I know it well. Lived, you know, right in the thick of it for many years. And but then while traveling for the last 3 years, get to experiment with, you know, all the sleep tracking that I do and see how different environments will impact it. And it is really pretty fascinating. So it's actually part of I have a three-part framework within Sleep as a Skill that looks at what can bring about great sleep. And out of that three parts, the first is psychology. So understanding our mindset, you know, so if any of these areas get thrown off at any point throughout our lives, and sleep is so dynamic that you can expect that some periods of your life you sleep fantastic and other periods maybe not so much, and how we can swiftly bring us back into alignment. And sometimes things happen, you know, someone dies, we get a divorce, you know, things occur in our lives, and that can impact our sleep. So that's, you know, but then, you know, those are clear ones, but then there's a lot of chronic things that can kind of be a bit more insidious that we might not have realized and just started creep up on us. And I was like, what, why am I only averaging whatever 6 hours of sleep a night, or what, you know, something that's just not working for us, can suddenly become very clear. And it's just been something that's been lurking for 10 years or something. Right.
Right.
So there's that. Then the other part of the framework is psychology, or physiology. So our body. So if we might have, you know, problems with our thyroid that we weren't clear about, maybe we're going through menopause and, you know, hot flashes, or, you know, there might be, you know, certain like mineral imbalances, vitamin deficiencies, certain things going on that are impacting our sleep that are that we're not clear of. And then the third part of the framework is, to your point, environment. And I would make the argument that just about anywhere on the planet, pretty much, you know, barring a few kind of obscure, remote places, then if there's people there, then there's often something we can do to improve the environment. And the reason I say that is that, you know, one of the things that, if you think of even just a simple light bulb is something that is skewing us off from, you know, kind of the natural blueprint of nature that we've been on for so many thousands of years.
Right.
You know, only in the last 200 years have we been shifting. So so that's, you know, on a simple scale. Then you scale it up to something like Manhattan, or I was just in Tokyo, which is like four times the size of Manhattan. And so it's like, you know, when you're around these type of, you know, levels of blue light, sound is another thing that can impact sleep. So noise pollution. So they've done studies around, you know, commuters even going in out of Manhattan. So they're looking at people that are having to like ride those subways and what have you through many hours of the day and look at their sleep quality. And, you know, it's hard because there's so many cofactors. So there's challenging studies to do. But
yeah, because I've been outside of New York and it's like, oh my gosh, it's too quiet. I can't sleep.
Right.
And
yes.
It's the weirdest thing, because you think that you don't realize that, especially being in the city so long, you don't realize that you're hearing all of that ambient noise all the time.
Yes. Yes. 100%.
Of a place where there is no noise, you're like, I can't sleep. It's way too quiet.
Yes. No. And right. The missing stimuli, the thing that we're used to, because then that background noise of the city and the sirens and all that stuff can suddenly become the ambient noise, to use your word. It's very important, because it's all of this is looking, the brain is looking to be safe, essentially. And we're very, we forget how primitive we are in a lot of ways. And you can almost build in time whenever you're traveling to often expect that the first couple nights can be different, to say the least, than, you know, some of your normal sleep at home, because of the fact that then, you know, we're linked up or designed to be kind of more on alert when we're in a new environment.
Right.
Because again, that safety part is so important. So being in a new environment, often, you know, we're a little bit more on edge or just on the lookout. We don't know where all the exits are. The safety conversation is high. And it can show up like, okay, something's wrong. Something's different. I'm used to hearing all this noise. Right. Why is it so quiet? Like, you know.
Exactly. So, okay, question, because we often hear people say, well, I can't sleep without some sort of aid. And there are so many things on the market now, whether it's prescription or over the counter. I mean, even, what is it? NyQuil has come out with something called ZQuil, which actually has no cough component to it. It's just something to help you sleep. So is this something, if someone is really, really struggling with sleeping, is this something that they should be doing? Because I know there are more natural things like melatonin and valerian and things that people can do, but should that, if they're seeing that getting sleep is a problem, should this be a first course of action?
Great question. So number one, you're making a great point. I actually just took a picture of, I was in a Walgreens and it was just, you know, there's a whole row where it literally just said sleep aids, and it was just like a whole wall. It was alarming. You know, and then I think for many of us, we think, okay, well, it's over the counter. It's no big deal. You know, I need sleep. I have this big, whatever, presentation tomorrow. Something's up. I need it. So then we go to the thing we think it's, you know, that is a sensible choice. And so there's a couple things of how to respond about that. So number one, you do want to look at, is this an isolated thing? So are we dealing something like with jet lag, where that might be one of the areas where you might consider something like melatonin, to help shift yourself back. You have, you know, a big trip and it's important and, you know, this and the other. So you really want to kind of guide your body to this new time zone. That might be a time when you could bring that in. The antihistamines, which is kind of usually the main property that are within those sleep aids, the Z-quils and what have you. Now they can have the effect of making you a bit more tired. However, when we look at our sleep architecture throughout the night with those, often we're finding it being more disturbed than we would like to have it. And so you can often wake up with this sense of grogginess anyway. So it's not even, you know, and believe me, there's such empathy, because I was that person for so many years that would, I have something really important tomorrow. I got to get my sleep back on track. Forever, like, back on track quest. And, you know, so that would be the main place I would go. Okay, let me run by whatever, CVS or something. And so what the problem with that is, one, we are in an interesting time where, you know, something like a melatonin has been so normalized, but we do forget that it actually is a hormone. So we're really taking our, which is, you know, and most of us don't think about that, because it's alarming how many places it's now in. You can even see it in kids' medications over the counter. So, you know, it's really, if you look at it, it's actually a hormone replacement therapy. You know, we just don't say that, but that is what that is. So we do want to be really mindful of these things and also start to look at, okay, so this is a bit of these band-aid approaches that we're doing, but what's at the root cause here? So when we do those band-aids, the concerns, particularly around like the hormone conversation, is that we do have a fear that then that can be impacting your body's ability to produce that hormone reliably and sustainably on its own. So that's why the whole, what I'm basically talking about at Sleep is a Skill is all this concept around circadian rhythm entrainment, it's called. Mm-hmm. And it's this concept that we can entrain our circadian rhythm to be more robust. And what that, all that looks like is just having a sufficient flow really of melatonin in the evenings that you've been a part of producing because of your commitment to your sleep. And when we talk about commitment to your sleep, unexpectedly, so many clients that I work with, it's like, oh my God, I'm improving all these areas of my life that I have been meaning to do, you know, but now that it's with the, through the lens of improving my sleep, and it's almost like gamified because each night I'm like, oh yes, I've gotten up to whatever, 7.5 hours of sleep and I'm feeling great and da 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 da. Then they get more and more committed because it's a daily kind of scale of their effectiveness. So those other areas often involve things like, you know, movement. Like there's a fine balance between exertion and rest for the body. And so we want to exert ourselves fully so that our bodies warm up throughout the day and cool down at night. That's just one example of one of the ways that you can ensure that you are producing melatonin consistently and reliably in the evening. So all of these things, you know, these are the less glamorous ways to get great sleep. You know what I mean? Like, you know, versus mm-hmm. just, oh, let me just get a quick, you know, order supplement on Amazon or whatever. Unfortunately, these take a bit more time, but over time, these can really, I swear to God, it feels almost like a superpower or something, you know, like when people are able to get this all dialed in, you just have such a, you know, unfair advantage over the rest of the population because so many people are struggling. And it really is something that it can set you apart from the pack because you know these things that can make a difference that unfortunately many do not know right now.
Oh, okay. So tell my listeners how they can find you if they need this amazing sleep help.
Yes. Oh, such a good question. So my website is sleepisaskill.com. I also send out weekly newsletters. If you haven't already heard in my speaking, I can be a very obsessive personality. So I actually have a weekly newsletter called Molly's Monday Obsessions, where I go into all the things I'm obsessing about over, you know, in the world of sleep and health and wellness. So those are jam-packed with all kinds of resources, just because I literally have a problem with going down the rabbit hole. This is where this whole company came from, honestly, was, you know, just researching to the, you know, to my heart's content. So you can sign up for that. We have the new sleep reset coming out within the beginning of March that is available. And then the Sleep is a Skill podcast, which, you know, is really exciting for that World Sleep Day launch. So that'll be fun.
Nice, nice. So this sounds amazing. This sounds absolutely amazing. I am like super stoked about this because, like I said, I myself have like had to learn how to get better sleep.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that that was a really big thing. But then when I saw, I was like, there's a sleep expert. Like, oh my gosh. Someone who just works in getting us better sleep. I mean, like, you know, when we think of getting better sleep, we may think of, you know, catching that midday nap.
Sure. You know,
but we don't think of getting all we need out of our nightly or daily sleep routines, you know?
Right.
So
absolutely. Yeah. You know, and this really came because I was desperately looking for a place to go, almost like, you know, when I was dealing with my sleep, and I just couldn't sleep and it felt so powerless. And I just felt so like small in this conversation of like, why am I at odds with my body? And I just cannot get it to turn off at night. Like, you know, and I was very scared, honestly, because I went to the doctors in Croatia. I was traveling at the time. And they, you know, couldn't speak English, of course. I mean, they were speaking their own language. And so I go in with Google Translate and they gave me basically their version of Ambien. And it was this real wake up call for me of like, oh my God, how is this like the path, you know, and I want to talk to someone or like come up with a system that's workable and natural and, you know, get to like what's at the core of this, like, why is this the case for me right now? And right. I just Googled and I personally couldn't find that thing. You know, and I felt like the only other options were like a sleep lab and it's, you know, there wasn't signs of sleep apnea and, you know, I wanted something in between all of that. And so this is what's been born out of it. I'm really excited. I feel like it's so important. And what's possible is just, you know, a whole new relationship with ourselves and our sleep and our life, that has us, you know, taking personal responsibility from a place that we might not even realize that there was an opportunity to be responsible around. Who would have thought? You know, I certainly didn't know of all these ways that I could improve my sleep and just have such a different experience of life each day. You know, it's a whole other way of being.
Wow. That is absolutely, absolutely amazing. So guys, all of Molly's information will be in the show notes, and definitely check out her newsletter, her website. I mean, and you have an amazing website, by the way.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that. That means a lot. Oh, cool.
Website. So definitely check that out and find out how you can get better sleep, because trust me, it does change your life.
Yes. It really does. Yeah, I've seen both sides of it. It's life without sleep and life with sleep. And definitely the life with amazing sleep, you know, is a game changer.
Yes. So Molly, thank you so much for coming on. I'd love to have you back on around World Sleep Day, you know.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah.
How that is going or how it went, or, you know, we will definitely, you know, figure out if we were going to do it before or after. But yes, I'd love to have you on around that time and, you know, just to figure out where things are.
Oh, that would be awesome. I would love that. Let's make it happen. Very excited about that. That day will be big. And, you know, it's, I'm excited to really shift the conversation around sleep, get this people, you know, talking about this more and more, prioritizing this right. More and more. And yeah, that would be wonderful.
Right. So thank you so, so much.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
So guys, I hope that you have gotten a lot out of this and want to optimize your sleep, because it does really change a lot. If you need any of Molly's help, or if you want to be able to find her, all of her information will be in the show notes. And guys, also don't forget to like, subscribe, follow, and leave a review on your favorite podcasting platform. But as always, guys, be good to yourselves and be good to each other. And happy shopping.